As promised, we're joined right now by an offensive lineman for the Detroit Lions. He signed with the Lions last offseason. He re-signed with the Lions earlier this offseason. He was an all-ACC player at Virginia. He was the 141st pick in the 2013 draft. He delivered 35,000 pounds of food in New York City last week. Ode Abushi joins me right now. Ode, it's nice to have you on. First off, how are you and everybody around you doing during this really unusual time?
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me on here. We've been doing good. You know, we've been able to stay healthy and we've been able to be blessed throughout this time. And, you know, I know it's been a tough time for New York City, so we are doing everything we could to do our part as a fellow New Yorker, as a fellow human, to give back and try to support people as much as we can during this time.
You know, I wanted to ask you about that very thing. Like, if we were to go back a little bit, you did play your high school ball in Brooklyn. Earlier in the offseason, you were at your home in New York City before you decided to leave. What was life like in New York as COVID-19 was becoming more of a threat?
You know, things got really eerie. You know, the city has so much energy and it's constantly vibing, constantly something to do and things to do. And then, you know, in a matter of a couple of days, you know, things just went flat. So, it had really a movie vibe to it as far as, you know, things being so out of picture and things being so different because, you know, obviously something like this we haven't experienced, you know, to kind of deflate a city like that. So it was definitely odd, you know, to see everybody bundled up and everyone inside and not really, you know, enjoying the city for what it really was.
Ode Abushi is joining us. And then your brother is a second-year resident at Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn. At one point, you were dropping off protective gear for him. How is he doing?
He's doing great, yeah. Like you said, he's in the middle of his residency right now in Brooklyn. He was actually one of his hospitals that he rotates that were admitted as a COVID hospital. So he was on the front lines of it. And this was the very beginning, you know, when they were running out of PPE and they were unable to get, you know, the supplies they really need to get. So, you know, I was able to pull together some supplies, drop some N95 masks off to him and some disinfectant sprays and things of that sort and let him, you know, at the end of the day, it's a part of his job, you know, and I think everybody in the medical profession right now are the true heroes during this time and they make that ultimate sacrifice to really go out there and put themselves and their family at risk, you know, to help a complete stranger. So for me to be able to, you know, to assist him in being as selfless as he possibly can, you know, it was a small little token I could have done to, you know, at least try to help him help other people.
Well said. Ode, so let me ask you this. You and your family, or you and your wife, I should say, made the decision to leave the city and head to New England. What made you decide to do that? And then what's a normal day like for you right now?
Well, we actually came up to Rhode Island. You know, New York being closed down, a lot of gyms were closed. A place I normally was able to get my training in at had closed down. So a buddy of mine I went to high school with, he had a gym he owns up in Rhode Island, in which he opened up to me. He's been closed for the last 2.5 months. So I was able to go in there and get my work. So that was really the main motivation behind coming up to Rhode Island to be able to get my work in and stay sane. But for me, in normal days, I get up, you know, I knock on my Zoom meetings with my team. I come in, I train for a couple hours, try to do some recovery rehab after that. And then I coast really, you know, the rest of the day. I hang out with the wife, you know, we're able to continue to try to, you know, help the city as much as we can. Hopefully get another food drive in next week. This time it'll be in Staten Island. You know, we'll be able to distribute another 35,000 pounds of produce. So, you know, just trying to stay active, you know, stay mentally focused, stay, you know, actively in the times we're in. And honestly, you know, this is a bigger time than COVID-19 for us. So, you know, we're trying to, you know, just put ourselves out there and make ourselves as available as we can to everybody.
Ode Abushi is joining us, and I definitely want to get to that part of it, too. In terms of working out, so you've got the friend, he's got the gym, nobody else was using it. So what was it like to work out during Ramadan? How did you go about approaching that?
So Ramadan, honestly, kept the schedule the same. Eating was a little different. You know, I would try to stay up as late as I can and, you know, try to sleep in as much as I can. And then I would get up and go train. And knocking my training out, you know, my training really didn't train. My fueling for the training was a little different as Ramadan went through, the way I would eat and how I tried to approach that. But, you know, the first week is always the toughest because your body goes, you know, from a normal routine to, you know, straight fasting. So it's a little bit of a transition. But, you know, once you get down a routine, your body's able to adjust and adapt to that and move forward. So it was, you know, for me, I've been doing this for about 12 years, you know, while observing Ramadan and playing football, whether it was at high school, college, and now in the league, I've been able to do it.
Ode, your family is absolutely amazing. Like I mentioned, your brother is a second-year resident. Another sister is a surgeon. One is preparing to be a nurse. Your sister, Tahani, is running for a Manhattan district attorney, and she makes the point that this commitment to helping others is, quote, a no-brainer. It's how we were taught, make a difference, end quote. When you were growing up then, what did your family teach you about the importance of making a difference? What was the message?
Honestly, the message was always, you know, treat people like you want to be treated. And in the position where we are, we've been very blessed, to be in the position we are today. But, you know, we didn't get these positions easily. We didn't, you know, overnight, you know, be a nurse or a doctor or running for DA. You know, this is something, you know, that was prepped to us as kids as far as, you know, the way we would treat people, the way we interacted with people, you know, the businesses we owned, you know, forced us to be selfless and reach out to communities and be in communities and work with people that we ideally never work with. So growing up, you know, I felt like that transition helped us open our eyes to all different kinds of cultures and different kinds of religions. And at the end of the day, ultimately, you know, for us as a family, I could honestly say, like, we don't see color. You know, we don't see a religion. We don't see, you know, we don't recognize people based off of how they look. You know, being a civil rights attorney or a doctor, and being in a position where, you know, you devote your lifetime, you devote your career to helping others, you know, you have no choice but to be, you know, but to see that and be raised that way. So for us, you know, always growing up, our parents always instilled in us, you know, treat people how you want to be treated, no matter what they are in life, no matter what position you hold. And for us, you know, carrying that mantra, carrying that quote with us throughout life really prepared us and helped propel us into the position we are today.
Ode Abushi is joining us, a member of the Detroit Lions. So to that point, last week, you and your sister donated 35,000 pounds of food in the city. It's a massive amount. What was the experience like, and how good did it feel to be able to give back like that?
It was amazing. You know, we teamed up. We can't take all the credit for that. We teamed up with a bunch of community members, PCNY. You know, hats off to them. It was really their initiative. We were able to help, you know, distribute everything and get it out. But it was honestly, it was overwhelming with the kind of gratitude we were able to, you know, feel through people. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we were able to give out boxes. We had people come up, pick up boxes, drop boxes off to soup kitchens and other places of need and other shelters throughout New York City where, you know, they didn't have as much access to food and things of that sort. And, you know, for us, it was the day, I mean, we handed out 35,000 pounds of produce in a matter of 3 hours. So you could imagine how fast and how, you know, much of a rush and things were just flying. So for us, you know, before we even kind of got a chance to realize exactly the extent of everything, you know, everything was gone. You know, the you know, people came and picked up multiple boxes and were able to, you know, feed families and, you know, people just being as grateful as they were and you know, having the NYPD help us out on the front lines or two in the community and extending their hands out too. So overall, you know, it was an amazing effort by the community. It was an amazing effort by a lot of people across the board that really, you know, teamwork make the dream work. And we were able to, you know, help out Harlem in that situation as much as we could.
Good for you. You know, I'm really curious. Your parents emigrated from Palestine. So what was life like for you growing up on 53rd Street and then on Staten Island?
It was fun. You know, for me, you know, I think being New York was one of the best things that could have happened to me growing up in New York City because it exposed me to so much diversity. Throughout my childhood, you know, New York City, you know, being born in Brooklyn, Sunset Park, and be around, you know, Spanish and Asians and that kind of community. And then, you know, growing up in Staten Island, obviously it's a different, more of a crowd there. You know, I went to high school still in Brooklyn, but, you know, primarily a white high school and things of that sort. So I saw a lot of, you know, and then going to Virginia, being as diverse of a school and being in the South now. So I was able to kind of see a lot of different cultures and things of that sort. And I really feel like, you know, being in that position, really, you know, for me, it helped me like, relate to a lot of people, you know, not necessarily feel exactly how they feel, but to a certain point, I understand their struggle. I understand, you know, what they stand for, what they've been, you know, what they've been exposed to and things of that sort. So for me, you know, I feel like my tolerance level when it comes to dealing with people and understanding people, is higher, you know, because of the way I grew up in the situation that I did grow up in.
Listen, before I let you go, speaking of growing up, I mean, I mentioned some of the accomplishments of your siblings. There's even more that I didn't even get to. So what was it like growing up as the ninth of 10 kids in a family of such highly motivated, successful people? How much did that inspire and motivate you?
You know, it was a lot of motivation. You know, you don't want to be that guy necessarily. You know what I'm saying? In this case, you don't want to be that child. So, I think everybody, fed off each other as far as we're motivated. My parents wanted a big family, so, at the end of the day, we never needed anybody but each other. So we constantly fed off each other for motivation, whether it was, seeing my brother go through a huge trial, seeing my sister accept a huge surgical case, or, seeing my brother or one of my other sisters graduate to college and vice versa. So seeing everybody accomplish, their feat and their goals, only motivated me more to kind of push to be the best of the best, whether I want to be an athlete, whether I was going to be a lawyer, a doctor, whatever it may be. The constant motivation of seeing my siblings, succeed and see how it trickled down, in their life only made, me motivated to kind of push it and fight for what I really wanted in life.
Right, so I'm curious. Every time I have a player on from the Lions on this show, we talk about the fan base in Detroit. It's a group that is so loyal, man. They've been through some hard times. You signed their last season. What did you make of the fans, and how hungry are you, or how hungry are they to win and have something to rally around and be excited about?
Yeah, Detroit, right off the bat, you drive to Detroit, man, you get that sense of a blue-collar city who's had so much history, who's had so much happen to them and been through a really rough patch as far as, their existence, with the motor industry and, Flint and everything like that. So, Detroit, Michigan, you go through that city and you feel nothing but a sense of work. You feel like pound away at the pavement and, that feeds off, we feed off of that as fans, as players, because we see that mentality that fans have. And we know at the end of the day, football, how it's important to everybody throughout America, and seeing the fans and how they translate. And people really look to that as a bit of a getaway, when the game's on, they like to put things on pause and just enjoy the game and be in their space. So, Detroit, big team. I think as players, we feed off of that. I think as players, we completely understand that, the city, it's been through a lot, and it's time for the right thing to happen to the city and continue to start to turn things around to the city. So, we've always been motivated by our fans. Our fans always been there for us, no matter what the record, no matter what the season's been like. Forest Field is always packed out, and it's always appreciated. And at the end of the day, we're just going to continue to put our best foot forward and give this city something to hold their hats on.
Odile, one last thought. You're one of a very small number of players with Palestinian roots who have played in the NFL, and you are regarded as the first Palestinian-American player to be drafted and stick with the team who drafted you. What's it mean to you to be a role model like that?
It's huge. When I got drafted, going through the whole process, there's so many things that could happen, right? There's 32 teams, there's 7 rounds. You don't know where you're going to get picked, what day, what team, what state you're going to end up. So there's a lot of unknown. And for me, being drafted, was huge that I found the home and I was able to, continue my career and accomplish my goals. But, it opened up to a whole nother side of me that I never expected as far as the support that I had with my community, being able to punch through that gap, that line of, there's not many Arab American players. It's not, we don't play that sport, et cetera. So just continue to give kids hope that it don't matter whether you're Palestinian, you're Muslim, whatever it is, you continue to put in the work, you continue to put in the daily deposits. You're gonna accomplish your goal. You're gonna get to where you're gonna get. And being Palestinian and that whole history of the Palestinian history and the oppression that goes on there, for me, to give people hope and give people light and make people proud is a feeling that I can never really explain. I'm forever grateful for.
And he's giving back 35,000 pounds of food delivered into New York City last week. He signed with the Lions last offseason, re-signed with them this offseason in All-ACC at Virginia. Ode Abushi. Ode, what a great conversation. I appreciate you. Great to have you on the show. And thanks for making so much time. I didn't mean to keep you that long, but it was so interesting I couldn't let you go. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Hey, appreciate it, Jim. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you. Have a great day. Really appreciate that conversation.